for the STARS. It's called TESS, and I'll give you what the acronym stands for, TSSS. Something like Terrestrial Exoplanet Survey Satellite is undergoing final preparations in Florida for its April 16th launch. And there's going to be another launch, too. There's going to be InSight Lander to go to Mars. So NASA's going to Mars. It already has enough spacecraft there. And this one is going to study the interior of Mars. They're actually holding a press conference today in California, and they're going to detail the next mission to the Red Planet. So I think they're going to study Mars quakes and interesting things. So I think one of the things about Mars is they're searching for life, of course, or signs of ancient life or life that used to be there. And since a lot of the water or the water on the surface has evaporated into the atmosphere, and Mars does not have much of an atmosphere, so they have to study under. So they're going to dig deeper, and some of the rovers there are digging, but they can't go very deep. So they're going to launch a few things with NASA. And I was interested in some topics about the International Space Station lately, and hopefully I can touch on those one day. But I was thinking today, why not concentrate on the International Space Station? It's a microgravity observatory, or it's in orbit around the Earth, and sometimes astronauts spend quite a few months, sometimes even a year up there. And there's one particular study that was two brothers, Mark and Scott Kelly. They're identical twins. So one of them was an astronaut. I think Mark, he went up into space. So he stayed there for a year, and he went up with a Japanese astronaut. And they did a lot of spacewalks and things like that. But the interesting thing about that, they did a genomic study. So they studied the genes of this astronaut, and they had a test case on Earth, a test sample. His twin brother stayed on Earth, and they wanted to compare how long-term durations in space and in low Earth orbit would affect the person's gene. And surprisingly, well, maybe not surprisingly, they found they were affected somewhat. So we're going to talk about that today. But I want to talk about Kelly Whitson. So who's Kelly Whitson? Well, she's an astronaut from NASA. And last September, she returned to Earth after spending, I believe it was 665 days in space. So she has the record for all U.S. astronauts. And I think she's 10th on the all-time list of all astronauts that have been into space. So congratulations, Kelly Whitson. So what I did is I followed a link, and I sent them an email, and I said, I'd like to interview Kelly Whitson. So they sent me something back, and I'm going to fill out the form, and hopefully I can get Kelly Whitson on. And I may have told people before, but I'm looking for Trina Ray. And who's Trina Ray? Well, I interviewed her a couple years ago, and she has been working on the Cassini mission to Saturn. Saturn's mission, Cassini, plunged into Saturn's atmosphere, I believe, last September. So we're going to interview her. She answered my email, but for a month now, she hasn't replied. So I hope to get her on. And when I get her on, we're going to talk about the Cassini mission. So what was the Cassini mission? It was a one-year, let's see, not one-year, 13-year mission. It was extended twice. I think it arrived in the Saturn system in 2004. It took about 6 years to get there, and it did some amazing science in the Saturn system. And what I want to do is talk about the mission. And Trina was also involved in perhaps my favorite mission of all time, which was Voyager mission. So we're going to talk to her. But first, let's go for a break. When I come back, we're going to talk astronomy. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
Power Chord Heavy Metal Radio, bringing you the best metal for over 30 years on CITR. Tune in every Saturday from 1 to 3.
This is my life. I wake up in the morning, I eat, I sleep, I
breakfast with the Browns.
So whatever it is, but I never shut it off for 5 minutes.
I can't wait to impress my friends with my astounding knowledge of cool.
Join your favorite Brownsters and tune in and listen to the best selection of down-tempo electropop lounge core.
Strictly Squaresville.
Remember, subtle, basic, Brown.
Breakfast with the Browns
on CITR 101.9 FM every Monday morning
from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
The older I get, the more life starts to make sense and the less I care.
Now we're riding the rainbow, the clouds lift, and we're making it like young. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're making it like you. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're making
it. You know, you can give 100 examples of what it isn't, but you, man, you're going to have a hell of a time saying what it is.
This is going out to the whole wide west side. I'm saying, yeah, break it down for me. Steady mobbing, rock, rock on.
I was just a young boy living in the hub city,
Eastside Compton.
Back in the days when Ice Cube and Easy had everything, talking about boy, you can't.
This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on CITR 101.9 on the west side at UBC.
Too short, bumped in every super boat and told us all how to ride for the west coast.
My kids are in everywhere you at, throw your gloves in the air and wave them like you just don't care. From LA to the Bay, what you say? All day, every day, any damn day. Take a look around, we got the whole world locked down. No, don't stop, won't stop.
That's why I put it down for the west side.
Ain't that long ago?
Oh no.
We were still in 40s out the liquor store.
Oh no.
Mama started tripping, so it's time to go.
Out to the park with the locusts.
Everybody broke, smoking roaches.
DJ Quick Western had every claiming he was from the CPT.
Y'all remember?
One time tried to clown. We had to burn this bitch on down.
One time for my was in incarceration.
Place a dime with you, but having lots of patience.
Two times for my sisters at the county built.
I got some Westside love for all you ghetto children.
Three times for my that done passed away.
I took some for you and pray for better days.
One day everything's gonna be fine.
Welcome back. This is Marco on the west side. You can see we're doing AstroTalk, and I've been doing some work on my website, www.marcosastrotalk.com. If you go to the astronomy news section, I've been updating listeners now on the latest news of astronomy. So every 2 weeks, hopefully I'll stick to that schedule. I'll do an astronomy podcast of all the astronomy news. So actually, it's a lot more work than I thought, because then later I got to edit my track, and that takes a long time. So anyway, let's talk about the twins. What twins? Are they the Sedins? No, they didn't go into space. But two twins were astronauts, and one of them did go into space. So they're Scott and Mark Kelly. I think they're 49 years old. One was born 6 minutes earlier than the other. But what happened when Scott Kelly went up into space, his twin brother Mark stayed down on Earth. So what NASA did is they did a lot of research on Scott to see how being in space for a long time, 1 year, would affect him. So now I'm looking at the International Space Station when Scott Kelly was there. Actually, he spent 340 days in space, so close to a year, double the length of a typical mission. so researchers can better understand how the human body reacts and adapts to long-duration spaceflight. So they studied the genes and they compared them, and some of the gene functions of Scott Kelly returned to normal within hours or within a week or within a couple of days, but 7% of them didn't. So NASA tried to explain that away. So it's important because first now this International Space Station, I believe it's in low Earth orbit, and that means it's still protected by Earth's magnetosphere, the magnetic bubble that surrounds Earth that protects us from space radiation and makes life possible. So they're in low Earth orbit, and but they're in microgravity or zero gravity, so they wanted to test the effects of, so they did, I think, 400 tests on them and compared them to his twin brother, and there were some changes when he returned. And after 1 year being back, there's still some changes. So his genes, some things about his genes changed. And now when I mention low Earth orbit, that's an important thing because what happens is I think NASA is trying to test how the human body will react to being in cramped quarters, being in a microgravity environment, in a little bubble floating around in outer space. One thing that is different is if astronauts go to Mars, they're going to be in, they won't be protected by the Earth's magnetic bubble. And that could be a problem because they don't know how the human body will react to that. And it's possible there's going to be changes. So the human body is a fine-tuned machine, and a lot of things in space, the radiation could damage or mar its performance. So a mission to Mars, the astronauts would take 3 years to go there and back, I believe. So what's the effect of being in space gonna do to this to the astronauts' bodies? So NASA recently recruited a group of 12 astronauts that they're going to train, so 12 new astronauts. They're going to train at the Johnson Space Center in Houston, and I believe there was over 18,300 applicants, so 12 were finally chosen, and they're going to go for a one-year training session. So here, NASA astronaut Scott Kelly, researchers available to discuss one-year mission. Oh, this is an old article, so I'll try to get something more up to date because we want up to date stuff, don't we? Okay. So I'm going to read an article now. Growing up in West Orange, New Jersey, twin brothers Mark and Scott Kelly were very close and they shared a lot. They were co-captains on their high school swim team and had the same AP biology class and worked at some of the same jobs. And then they both became astronauts. So Scott launched the International Space Station aboard a Russian Soyuz spacecraft from Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. And he landed in Kazakhstan when he came back. So he came back in September, and NASA studied what effect this had on his genes. And what was important when Scott Kelly came back, his brother Mark, his twin brother, which had, of course, they have a lot of the same features, a lot of the same genes. They used him as a test case to see how it would affect the genes of the Scott who went into space. But what is interesting is for relativity, if somebody goes on a mission and they travel, let's say half the speed of light or three quarters of the speed of light, relative to our clocks, we're going to compare. So let's say if I had a twin brother and he went up into space and he's traveling at half the speed of light. Let's say I could have a little camera that could film my twin while he's in space. So the camera's on board the ship and I look at their clock and I'm on Earth and they're traveling at, let's say, half the speed of light, I would notice that their clock seems to be slowing down. So my twin brother in the spacecraft, he would think everything's normal. Now, let's say if my twin brother can look back on Earth, he would look at our clocks and he'd say, their clocks are speeding up. So in relativity, with relativity and traveling close to the speed of light, some things change. Now, if my twin brother went away for, let's say, 2 years, depended how fast he traveled. If he traveled at half the speed of light, and let's compare that, let's say if he traveled at 3/4 of speed of light. So he's up in the sky traveling at 3/4 of speed of light. When he comes back, I will have aged a lot more. He thinks my clock's going faster. And the more he approaches the speed of light, the faster he sees my clock is moving. Now, when I'm watching his clock, let's say, like I said, we have a camera on board and the camera sending signals back to us, then all of a sudden, I would think his clock is slowing down. So when he returned to Earth, maybe he aged 2 years, I might have aged 20 years. So that's what traveling at the speed of light does. It affects things like length, time, space. And if I were to see his spacecraft, it would, let's say if his spacecraft was 100 meters long. Now he's traveling at a fraction of the speed of light. All of a sudden, I would think if I took a measurement of his spacecraft, it wouldn't measure 100 meters. I can't remember if it would, I think it would measure longer. So I would look at his spacecraft and it would be longer than 100 meters. And he would seem taller. And when he looked back at me, he'd look at me and he'd see that person looks shorter. So what happens is time and space is not absolute. Depends on your speed of travel. And if you're traveling close to the speed of light, things change. So you would notice that their spacecraft, their watch, their clock on board, it would not correspond to what you think was normal down here. So again, you would look at their clock and you would think, well, their clock is going slower. And if he could look at my clock, he'd say my clock was going faster. I would think his spacecraft was getting longer and bigger, where it is still 100 meters if he measured it. But when I measure it, it's more than 100 meters. And he would seem to be getting heavier. And he would not think that he's getting heavier. So a lot of things change when you're traveling at the speed of light. So time, space, and length is not absolute. Depends on what speed you're traveling. So I'm wondering if an astronaut goes into space in microgravity, and they've done these kind of experiments. They've measured how time passes. Let's say in a big building. So you go up 100 stories, and then you have an atomic clock which measures. Now, you have one clock on the 100th floor, one clock on the first floor. Now, the clock on the 100th floor would measure a shorter time, and the clock on the bottom floor would measure a longer time, even though the same time relatively passed. So a lot of things change when you're in different gravity situations and when you're traveling faster, especially when you're traveling at close to the speed of light. So my question is, if people go to Mars, how much slower do they age? Because they're in microgravity, there is no gravity, and maybe if you can make the spacecraft rotate to simulate gravity, maybe then things wouldn't change. But I'm wondering if a person goes up into space, could they measure exactly how much time relative to the time on Earth that passed? What's the time difference between the two points? So that'd be an interesting thing to ask. So let's talk about NASA astronaut and Expedition 46 Commander Scott Kelly. So he had a Russian counterpart, Mikhail Kornienko. They returned to Earth on March 2nd in Kazakhstan of last year. They were, here's a quote from NASA. NASA's Administrator Charles Bolden. You know what? I think Charles Bolden is out and Trump hasn't appointed a successor yet. So there's a new acting administrator, but not a full administrator. So let's see, a full-time administrator. So let's see what NASA Administrator Charles Bolden said. And quote, Scott Kelly's one-year mission aboard the International Space Station has helped to advance deep science exploration and America's journey to Mars. Scott has become the first American astronaut to spend a year in space, and in doing so, helped us take one giant leap toward putting boots on Mars. End quote. During the record-setting one-year mission, the station crew conducted almost 400 investigations to advance NASA's mission and benefit all mankind. So one particular experiment that was done on Scott Kelly was to one particular research project examine fluid shifts that occur when body fluids move into the upper body during weightlessness. These shifts may be associated with visual changes and a possible increase in intracranial pressure, which are significant challenges that must be understood before humans expand exploration beyond Earth's orbit. The study uses the Russian Chibis device to draw fluid back into the legs while the subject's eyes are measured to track any changes. NASA and Roscosmos are looking at continuing the fluid ship's investigation with future space station crew. They took an advantage of a unique vantage point of the space station with an orbital path that covers more than 90% of Earth's population to monitor and capture images of our planet. They also welcomed the arrival of a new instrument to study the signature of dark matter and conducted technology demonstrations that continue to drive innovation, including a test of network capabilities for operating swarms of spacecraft. Pretty interesting. One of the questions I have is, why can't they make this International Space Station bigger? So we look at TV, Star Trek Voyager, and Star Trek The Next Generation, and the original Star Trek, they had big stations that flew through the cosmos. So why don't they do that? Why don't they make a huge station? Oh, and there's something that I must mention that I wasn't too happy about. There was news a couple days ago that the James Webb Telescope has set a new launch date. So I believe when they first started it, it was supposed to launch in 2016. Then things kept getting delayed, so they put it back. It was supposed to launch 2019, but now the NASA comes on and says, guess what? We're launching in, I think, May or March 2020. So the James Webb Telescope, the premier telescope, the most advanced telescope in history, is delayed again. And the NASA administrator, acting, comes on and he sugarcoats it, but it was a disappointment. How can NASA keep doing this? They do such wonderful things, and now this, the James Webb Space Telescope is delayed. So what I'm going to do now, I'm going to take a break, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to find one. Let's see if I can find one that I like. One of my old favorite. I'll just put something on, and then I'll come back. And when we do, we're going to talk more astronomy, and we're going to listen now to an angry listener. So hang on. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
We just played Velvet Dinosaurs and their latest hit, Eating the Plate. Now let's go to the phones and hear what you have to say. Go ahead, caller. You're on the line.
Master! Dirty red scum!
Really?
Kill!
That's really
kill! Bad. Kill! Filthy bastard Tommy! I hate him! I hate
okay,
him!
Well,
You know, maybe you should relax a little bit. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Happy. Boing.
Sometimes I'd like to take a peppermint and a switchblade and a Cadillac and throw it all in a fire.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Radio for crazy people and the elderly. Oh yeah.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, the one and only...
That's it. Pack it up.
You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco on CITR 101.9.
Thank you. That was Sarah, one of our former managers, and that was Moni Love. It's a shame. So I was trying to find a specific article I had that had a lot of information and told what happened to Scott Kelly's genes after he went up to the International Space Station. So 7% of his gene function is continuing to be out of whack. A lot of his bodily functions returned to normal within hours or within days, and certainly within a week. But after a week, 7% of his genes were different than what were measured on his twin and who stayed on Earth. So Scott Kelly went up for a one-year mission, and he returned, and NASA did a lot of tests while he was up there. And then they tested how being in space affected him for the duration of the 1 year. So let's go to another article, and here it says, how stressful will a trip to Mars be on the human body? We now have a peek into what the NASA twin study will reveal. That's a hard word to say. Preliminary, there we go, research results for the NASA's twin study debuted at NASA's Human Research Programs Annual Investigators Workshop in Texas on January 23rd. NASA astronaut Scott Kelly returned home last March after nearly 1 year in space, living on the International Space Station. His identical twin brother Mark remained on Earth. Researchers found this to be a great opportunity for a nature versus nurture study. Thus, the twin study was born. Using Mark, a retired NASA astronaut, as a ground-based control subject, 10 researchers are sharing biological samples taken from each twin brother during and after Scott's mission. From these samples, knowledge is gained as to how the human body is affected by extended time and space. These studies are far from complete. Additional research analysis is still in process. So Susan Bailey's investigation focuses on something called telomeres and telomerase. It is understood when looked at over many years, telomeres decrease in length as a person ages. Interestingly, on a timescale of just 1 year, Bailey found Scott's telomeres on the ends of chromosomes in his white blood cells increased in length while in space. So usually a telomere decreases in length, but in microgravity, it increased in length. This could be linked to the increased exercise and reduced caloric intake during the mission. However, upon his return to Earth, they began to shorten again. Interestingly, telomerase activity, the enzyme that repairs the telomeres and lengthens them, increased in both twins in November, which may be related to a significant stressful family event happening around that time. Matthias Basner's study, Cognitive Performance in Spaceflight, is looking at the cognition, especially the difference found during a 12-month mission as compared to 6-month mission. Following the 1 year mission, he found a slight decrease in speed and accuracy post-mission. Overall, however, the data does not support a relevant change in cognitive performance in flight by increasing the mission duration from 6 to 12 months. So there they have one of their things they found. The cognitive factor didn't change. Fred Turek's focus is on the microbiome in the GI tract, or bugs naturally found in the gut to aid in digestion. Differences in the viral, bacterial, and fungal microbiome between the twins were pronounced at all times. However, this was expected due to their differing diet and environment. Of interest were the differences in microbial species observed in Scott on the ground versus his space and time. One shift was a change in ratio of two dominant bacterial groups Firmicutes and Bacteroidetes. Bacteroidetes, I guess, present in his GI tract. The ratio of one group to the other increased during flight and returned to pre-flight levels upon return to Earth. Emmanuel Mignot's investigation, immunome studies, looked at changes in the body before and after a flu vaccine was administered to each twin. Following flu vaccines, personalized T-cell receptors were created. These unique T-cell receptors increased in both twins, which was the expected immune response that projects from catching the flu. Oh, I just got hit. Sorry, I had a muscle strain in my back. Chris Mason is performing genome sequencing on the DNA and RNA contained within the twins' white blood cells with this investigation. Whole genome sequencing was completed and showed each twin has hundreds of unique mutations in their genome, which are normal variants. RNA, which is transcriptome sequencing, showed more than 200,000 RNA molecules that were expressed differently between the twins. They will look closer to see if a space gene could have activated while Scott was in space. Andy Feinberg studies epigenomics, or how the environment regulates our gene expression. That's the word I was looking for. They found that after Scott Kelly returned to Earth after a few months, 7% of his gene expression had changed. So I'm going to look into that. What does gene expression mean? In the DNA within Scott's white blood cells, he found that the level of, what's this called, methylation or chemical modifications to DNA decreased while in flight, including a gene regulating telomeres, but returned to normal upon return. I'm not sure what a telomere. I guess since I'm doing this broadcast, I should find out, shouldn't I? On the ground, Mark's level. So Mark was the twin who stayed on the Earth while his twin brother Scott went up in space. On the ground, Mark's level of methylation in the DNA derived from his white blood cells increased at the midpoint of the study, but returned to normal in the end. Variability was observed in the methylation patterns from both twins. However, this epigenetic noise was slightly higher in Scott during space flights and then returned to baseline levels after return to Earth. These results could indicate genes that are more sensitive to a change in environment, whether on Earth or in space. Through further research, integrating these preliminary findings in coordination with other psychological, physiological, and technological innovations, NASA and its partners will continue to ensure that astronauts undertake future space exploration missions safely, efficiently, and effectively. A joint summary publication is planned for later in 2017 to be followed by investigator research articles. NASA's Human Research Program enables space exploration by reducing the risk to human health and performance through a focused program of basic, applied, and operational research. This leads to the development and delivery of human health, performance, and habitability standards, countermeasures and risk mitigation solutions, and advanced habitability and medical support technology. So, didn't really say much. It was a bit vague. I wanted to know what the results were. So anyway, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to a break, and I'm going to probably play the Screaming Heads thing, because I like that. Or the Angry Listener. Where is this Angry Listener? I like listening to the Angry Listener. He sounds pretty cool. And they let him scream, which is pretty cool too. Okay, so I'm going to go for a break. We're going to get angry. When I come back, we're going to do more astronomy. You're listening to Astro Talk on 101.9.
We just played Velvet Dinosaurs and their latest hit, Eating the Plate. Now, let's go to the phones and hear what you have to say. Go ahead, caller, you're on the line.
Master Dirty Red Scum! Take it in the teeth, redheads!
Really?
Kill!
That's really
kill! Bad. Kill! Filthy bastard tummies! I hate him! I hate
okay,
him!
Well,
You know, maybe you should relax a little bit. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Let's do some quick yes or no questions. Are the following things technically possible? Life on other planets, is that theoretically possible?
Yes.
Okay. What about a Schwarzschild wormhole?
Yes.
Okay, what about this? Me going on a date with Charlize Theron?
No.
What, not at all? In no universe?
No.
In none of the infinite universes does that happen?
No.
It's completely beyond the bounds of scientific possibility, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Quick follow-up question. In any of those potential universes, am I the one rejecting her and that's why it doesn't work out?
No. You do realize that typing your response is difficult for me, correct?
Okay, sure, yeah. It's just I'm trying to play this out because I'm just trying to see if there was any hypothetical hope.
No.
It doesn't matter. But never say never. Okay, if time travel were possible, would you want to go back in time and refuse to do this interview?
Yes.
You truly are an incredibly smart man. Stephen Hawking, thank you so much for your time. You've stated that you believe there could be an infinite number of parallel universes. Does that mean that there is a universe out there where I am smarter than you?
Yes, and also a universe where you're funny.
Okay. All right. Look, if you're so smart, what number am I thinking
13.
Of? It was 13. I was thinking of 13. Okay, that was a lucky guess. What am I thinking right now?
That you've been a huge disappointment for your family.
I wasn't thinking that.
In the winter, I seen you with your girls walking, in your chinchilla fur. I was laid up in the cool back shader, looking at your face just pure with no makeup. A little bit of MAC lip gloss, hair in a bun, well done. Looking for a ring, I seen none, so I hopped out the coupe and hot the soup to stop and introduce like I'm shining. You my destiny, in your diamond cluster, too much just to touch you.
This is Robin, the program manager at CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco, the best astronomy program on the planet.
Put it in your purse and call.
On the telephone, she heard my voice. Tell me to pick her up in my Rolls Royce. If my Rolls Royce is not the ladies, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Mercedes. If my Mercedes would get full of the disease. My fighter bird, if my fighter bird cannot take the curve. Girl, put your ass and the dumb at your butt.
You're getting closer. My player days is over. Well, maybe not completely, but still in all. Come here, let's see a hug on my bed. And let me get between your legs. Lay on your back. Take it from the back. Like a bag you're supposed to. I know you like that. With the neighbors when they sleep, grab the sheets with your teeth.
Welcome back, Shine, and our former program manager, Robin. So thank you, Shine. That's S-H-Y-N-E, Shine. So we're back now, and I'm going to talk about some more research on the International Space Station. I was reading an article the other day and talked about sintering. So what's sintering? Something about maybe mixing liquids with fluids or liquids with solids or something like that, or I'm not sure exactly. But what was important was the astronauts and NASA were comparing how sintering works in space in the microgravity environment and how it works on Earth. I believe what happens with sintering, some of the material has to sink down into the fluid. And when you're in space, there's no gravity, so the material doesn't sink down. So they probably knew that beforehand. I'm sure they did. So they were comparing how sintering works in space. So that's interesting. Some things where gravity is, for example, our natural fluids in our body, our blood, all the other fluids in space, there's no gravity pull it down. So I think they're doing research on how that affects people because their fluids, which should circulate out of the body, all of a sudden go up all towards the head and the upper part of the body. So NASA's got to look at all these things because when an astronaut goes to Mars, let's say, or on a long mission, let's say if it takes 6 months to get there, if an astronaut's in trouble, he will send a signal back to Earth, and it could take a couple of minutes for them to get the signal. So especially, let's say we're going in hundreds of thousands of years in the future, where if we're still around, we're traveling into the solar system somewhere or outside of the solar system, and let's say we're a couple of light years from Earth, and all of a sudden something goes wrong. Well, we gotta relay our message back to Earth, and because we're two light years away, it'll take 2 years for the signal to reach Earth. So all of a sudden, Earth will receive the signal, and then they'll say, "Oh, this happened two years ago." So obviously, the situation on board has changed. So the astronauts will have to have all the facilities, all the mental facilities, and all the tools to try to solve this problem, and maybe they can't. So that's going to be an interesting thing. So it reminds me, maybe space travel is going to be like this. In the 1700s and 1600s and 1800s, when, let's say, British ships, when they were colonizing the world, which was a bad thing, all these European ships, they went to Asia and they colonized Asia. So let's say if they're having problems, they have to contact London, let's say, some British sailors, and so they send a message to London. It'll take 6 months by boat to get to London. So London will finally receive the message, and then they'll say, okay, well, this is how you solve it, and they'll send a message back. And guess what? It'll take 6 months for the message to come back. So while the person sent the message in Asia, it'll take about a year or more. It took about a year or more for the message to be delivered and to sent back to get a response. So the same thing's going to happen when we're in outer space. Let's say if we're examining the Pluto system, or let's say Pluto, or let's say Saturn. Okay, we're in the Saturn system, and we're examining the moon Enceladus, and all of a sudden something is, we have a question or something goes wrong, message has to be relayed to Earth. It could take hours for the message to get to Earth, and then when Earth receives it, they act on it, they find a solution, they send it back. So by the time we get it, it could be half a day or a day before the message is received from when we originally sent it. So these are things that have to be taken into account. It's going to be interesting how those things are solved in the future. So at the end of the day, let's look at Tupperware. So this is dated March 29th. It says, Tupperware takes the space to help improve astronauts' diets. So here's a picture, and it says, Harold Levine, a PhD, a research scientist at NASA's Kennedy Space Center in Florida, reviews the growth of several tomato plants in a laboratory in the space station processing facility. The tomato plants are grown in the Veggie Passive Orbital Nutrient Delivery System, or PONS. That's an interesting acronym. Veggie PONS is a direct follow-up on the Veg01 and Veg03 hardware and plant growth validation tests. PONS is planned for use during Veg 4 and Veg 5 on the International Space Station after the Veggie PONS validation flights on SpaceX 14 and OA9. I'm not sure what OA9 is. So now let's read the article. For decades, airtight plastic containers have been synonymous with keeping baked goods and leftovers fresh. Now, a manufacturer of iconic household plasticware has helped provide fresh food in space. As agency plans for future missions to deep space destinations, the nutritional boost of fresh food, and the psychological benefits of growing plants becomes more and more paramount. Since 2015, NASA astronauts have supplemented their space diet with fresh greens grown in the vegetable production system known as Veggie on the International Space Station. So what is Veggie? Let's see. I'm going to look now. What does Veggie stand for? V-E-G-G-I-E. The Vegetable Production System. So Veggie. It's not V-E-G-G. It's just, they should say VPS, but instead they say Veggie. So the Vegetable Production System, Veggie, is a deployable plant growth unit capable of producing salad-type crops to provide the crew with a palatable, nutritious, and safe source of fresh food and a tool to support relaxation and recreation. The Veggie provides lighting and nutrient delivery, but utilizes the cabin environment for temperature control and as a source of carbon dioxide to promote growth. So that's what veggie is. Oh, one of the interesting articles I was reading, they were looking how permafrost is thawing in Greenland. And what has happened, the permafrost is thawing quicker than they suspected. So what happened is plants that have died and that have been kept cold in the permafrost, all of a sudden, they're now being exposed. So this permafrost is melting, the ice is melting. So these things are releasing carbon and CO2. So they're releasing greenhouse gases. And what happened is because of global warming, they're melting quicker than we thought before. So all of a sudden, we're going to have a massive inflow of carbon in our atmosphere from the melting of the permafrost, because it's keeping frozen plants that would dead plants that would have otherwise released their carbon into the atmosphere. So our global warming could really accelerate. And they're finding cracks underneath Greenland. So what's happened is during the summer, when it's getting warmer now, so the summers are warmer, the winters are shorter, and lakes are appearing in Greenland when glaciers and ice melt. And what happens when this water appears, it forms lakes and puddles. And now they're finding, scientists are finding fissures in the ground underneath and kind of tunnel system where the lakes are draining. So what happens is the lakes are draining and they eventually drain into the ocean. So this is going to lead to an increase in global sea levels. So we're in trouble if we don't do something about this. So our planet is warming too quickly, and there's time to do something about it. So anyway, with the veggie system, astronauts have to push water into each plant pillow with a syringe. In previous crops grown in the veggie system using pillows, some plants fare better than others because not all the plants receive equal amounts of water and oxygen. The primary goal of this newly developed plant growing system, the passive orbital nutrient delivery system, or PONS, is to achieve uniform plant growth. Okay, so I'll look at this more when I have time. So it's nearly 3 o'clock. Thank you for listening, and I'm going to sign out. So this is Marco. Again, look at my website, www.marcosastrotalk.com. It's coming together. I'm working on it, and it's doing well. So thank you for listening. Have a pleasant Thursday.